Hello and welcome to the Food Allergy and Your Kiddo podcast. I am your host, Dr. Alice Hoyt. Delighted to be joined today by Dr. Sakina Bajwala. She is a board certified pediatrician and allergist who practices in the western suburbs of Chicago. She is a fellow of the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, and she is an absolute boss when it comes to immunotherapy. And part of what I think makes her a boss, getting to know her some, is really her approach to working with families and really what we're going to talk about today, which is shared decision making. So Dr. Bajwala, thanks so much for coming to the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to talking to you today.
Me too. So let's just dive right in. How do you really define, like, you internally as a physician, as a kiddo's doctor, how do you really define shared decision making?
So to me, in my practice, shared decision making essentially means that I ask families what their goals are, and I give them all of their options. We comprehensively discuss the risks and benefits of all the options that are available to them. I let them know which option I believe would be most likely to meet their goals and their expectations. And then I shut my mouth and I sit back and I listen and wait for them to ask me questions and I answer them. But it is not my job as the physician or allergist to make the call on what it is we are going to do. It is my job to share the information and be an advisor. And it is the patient's and the family's job to together come to a decision on which of the options I have presented that they want to pursue.
Mm-hmm. That is very pretty much straight in line with the way I try to approach my families as well, is sort of I'm a guide and I'm a very well researched and expert guide. And I'm going to present the options and present them as how I think would best serve that patient, and discuss things, especially, you know, let's just dive into some cases here. I've certainly had kiddos come to me whose the family was interested in oral immunotherapy, but the kiddo who was maybe a tween or a teen was just like absolute no-go, like, they're a very important part of shared decision making and the team. And so OIT is just not an option for them right now because they're not on board with it. And so then we discuss with the parents and with the kiddo too, like, you know, this doesn't seem like this is a good option right now. And that's okay. I think sometimes social media, here comes a tangent, y'all. I think sometimes with social media, treatments or, you know, the latest thing, it gets so sensationalized and people think everyone should do it or whatever the case may be. People have heard me on talk about the advertisement for Palforzia, be proactive about your child's food allergy. That ad is absolutely bonkers to me because you can be proactive about your child's food allergy and not have your child on Palforzia, and not do OIT at all. And you're still being proactive. Right. So
that standard of care remains avoidance and preparation with emergency medication. That is the standard of care. Now, the standard of care may be changing, right? Mm-hmm. And it is changing very much so and very rapidly. But mm-hmm. it's really important to emphasize to families when we're talking to them that your only options are not different treatment options. Right? Mm-hmm. The first and foremost, the option available to you is to do what you've already been doing, mm-hmm. and we can help you do it more successfully, which mm-hmm. is avoidance yeah. and preparation. Yes. and awareness of how to recognize an allergic reaction and springing to action quickly. So in the event, and hopefully unlikely event, of an accidental exposure, you rapidly identify the symptoms and you give the appropriate treatment without delay. That's option number one, always.
I think that's so important that families hear that. You know, so if you're listening to this and you've been told by three different food allergy mom friends that they're doing OIT, OIT, and slit, and, you know, when are you going to do this with your child? And it's just not the right time for y'all to do it. I want you to hear what Dr. Bajwala just said, that if it's not the right time, it's not the right time. And that avoidance is absolutely a fantastic management strategy for food allergy. And
especially if you've already been doing it successfully, right? If you've gone from initial diagnosis all the way up until you're at the allergist's office and you've never had a reaction from accidental exposure, you have been successful. And maybe you don't need treatment. Maybe the return on investment of a treatment in your particular case, the calculations don't pan out. And you're better off just continuing what you've already been doing quite well.
Mm-hmm. I think this probably really speaks to parents of tweens and teens in whom starting oral immunotherapy at least would be significantly life-altering in a way that isn't necessarily positive. The reason I say that is because of the safety window that has to be followed if you're doing oral immunotherapy. In my office, that's 1 hour before, 2 hours after the dose. You're not doing anything that's raising your heart rate or your body temperature. Anytime you have a fever, take Motrin, you know, a whole slew of things. You're not dosing. And that just is not consistent with a good quality of life for many tweens and especially many teens who are doing so many super cool before school and after school activities. And it's really not feasible for them to do the OIT and keep doing activities. And we would never want them to stop doing those activities. And then thinking about, okay, what about when they go to college? So say they're a junior or a senior in high school and they want to start OIT, or somebody in their family wants them to start OIT. Then, you know, what's going to happen when they go to college? Nothing good with OIT.
And it's a very different scenario. If you have a child who began OIT when they were 5 or 6, they reached maintenance by third grade, and they've been in maintenance for years before they leave the nest and go out to function independently. Mm-hmm. By that point, most of my patients are only dosing maybe 3 to 4 times a week, and I've already started shaving down their exercise restriction because they have been so successful for so long in maintenance. That is a very different scenario than showing up in my office when you have a high school junior, which is, in my opinion, after experiencing this now, the most stressful year of high school, and saying, okay, we got to do this now and we need to be done before we go to college. Otherwise, I'm not going to let him go. Then I have to say, okay, let's take a step back. Who am I treating here? Am I treating the child? Or are we treating parental anxiety? Because if it's parental anxiety that we're treating, I don't need OIT to treat that. We have other tools at our disposal to help with that. The big toolkit of things we can do to help with that.
Hi there. This is Alexis from the Hoyt Institute of Food Allergy. Did you know that the Institute is the official sponsor of the Food Allergy and Your Kiddo podcast? And did you also know that you are now able to connect with Dr. Hoyt directly? That's right. We are now offering food allergy office hours for parents. These one-on-one virtual sessions are available for parents all across the country. It's an educational session, not an office visit, where you can ask all of your food allergy questions and finally get answers. It's as comfortable as having a cup of coffee with your bestie. Simply click the link in the show notes to schedule and mention this ad. We are so, so excited to connect with parents across the globe with this new service. Okay, now back to Pam and Dr. Hoyt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to ask you, when you are practicing shared decision making, which I imagine with you is just literally second nature. It's just how you practice medicine is through shared decision making. You're never walking into a room telling a family this is what you're doing. You're walking into a room equipped to discuss all of the different management options. How do you do that with little kiddos compared to with your tweens and then also with your teens?
Mm-hmm. I think it is vital that even though they may not be at the age of consent, of legal mm-hmm. consent, that young patients are actively involved in the decision-making process and that they have mm-hmm. agency over their own bodies. Mm-hmm. For that reason, for any child in our practice, if they're over the age of 12, we get assent, written assent from the child. Mm-hmm. So there's consent, which is kind of legal, informed consent, and anyone 18 and up must do their own informed consent, right? Parents mm-hmm. cannot do the informed consent for an 18 or 19 year old. But for patients who are younger than that, but still very capable of having an informed discussion, of asking questions, of having very strong opinions about what their goals are and how they would like to achieve them, I have made it quite clear that without assent from the patient, their permission to move forward with this treatment, it doesn't matter. If the parents say, don't worry about it, we're signing, we consent, it doesn't matter. I need assent from that child, and I will go through the same shared decision-making process as I would with an older patient with these younger mm-hmm. children. Just the words are different, right? The conversation is at a level that kids can understand because I need to know that they're motivated to do this, and they're not just doing it to please the adults that they love. Mm-hmm. Children, by very nature of their existence, want to please the adults who they love and respect. Mm-hmm. That includes their parents and their teachers and their coaches and also their doctors. They mm-hmm. never want to be a disappointment. And they, when pressed enough, will give you the answer that they think you want to hear.
Yeah.
And so it's vitally important that especially at that like 9 to 17 year age group, mm-hmm. that we don't stop asking just because we heard the answer we wanted, that we press right. a little further mm-hmm. and try to poke holes in the assent. And say, okay, but you understand these are the ways in which your life will change, at least temporarily. Are you okay with that? Mm-hmm. Okay, but you understand that there's a strong possibility that you're really going to hate the taste of nuts and you're not going to particularly enjoy dosing every day. Are you okay with that? Right? You understand that you're going to have this exercise restriction. So if your friend knocks on your door and says, let's go ride bikes, you might need to say, I got to wait a little bit. Right? These scenarios, these mm-hmm. conversations need to be explained to younger patients in a very concrete way and not in the abstract way that we discuss them with adults, saying, well, there might be an exercise restriction or this or that. With kids, you need to give specific examples and then sit back and wait for their reaction and their response. And you have to be able to pick up on nonverbal cues.
Yes.
Because you might have someone who is saying yes, but their eyes are saying no. And you have to push and press when you see that and say, you know, I hear you saying yes, but I'm looking at your face and I can tell that you're hesitating a little bit. And I'd like to talk about that a little more. Tell me what scares you about the idea of pursuing this process. And then once again, sit back and listen. Right? Like, ask the question, but then don't just keep talking, right? You have to wait and hear what the patient has to say and then address their concerns because that's your primary responsibility. The patient is your responsibility, right? Right.
That is so good. And it really comes back to transitioning from the pediatric care model to the adult care model. And one, you know, there's not many benefits to having a food allergy compared to not having a food allergy. But one potential benefit is that if we as allergists are doing our jobs correctly and doing it well, then when we see these kids once or twice a year, or if they're doing OIT, seeing them multiple times per month sometimes, then we are assessing where they are in their care journey. And over time, helping them grow in that transition from being the kiddo where mom is making the decisions, depending on the age, definitely having a sense and them totally in on the process too, but really getting them to also where they know that they need to call to make an appointment, getting to where they know how to obtain their epinephrine auto injector. And these are life skills that sometimes with our healthy kiddos that don't necessarily see the doctor except for like a physical every now and then, those kiddos don't necessarily learn. And then it seems like all of a sudden a kid's 18 and mom can't do things so much anymore. Like the kiddo needs to do it because the kiddo's now an adulto, right? or so says the government, right? And so if we're doing our jobs well and correctly, then when we're seeing these kids, we are helping them transition. And that really begins with that beautiful description of shared decision making that you just laid out. It's that we're not going to bulldoze them. As well-meaning as loving parents can be, it has to be shared decision-making. And I think, too, what that tells the child, whether they're 8 years old or 17 years old, is that you matter. Your voice matters. This is your body. And what you are doing with your body matters, and you are the boss of it.
And what I will emphasize is the shared decision making process is not a single point in time. It is not something we only do at that first or second visit when we're doing an informed consent or obtaining assent and talking about risks and benefits of a treatment and signing on the dotted line, right? This is an ongoing process. Because people's goals and priorities will change and evolve as they grow and evolve and as their life situation changes. So you may have a 5 or 6 year old who did beautifully with OIT and now they're 11 and they're hiding peanut M&Ms under the couch cushions. And we are sitting down and the parents say, we need to get back on OIT. And of course, that's their first instinct. You need to help us get back on OIT. And my instinct is, well, maybe we don't need OIT anymore because clearly the patient doesn't want it anymore. So before I start to try to figure out what dose we're going to resume OIT at, let's sit down and talk about why these peanuts are under the couch instead of in your belly. And then we can go from there, because maybe all of a sudden the patient says, you know, I find them so disgusting. I dread it all day. It's ruining my quality of life. Mm-hmm. I am looking for any excuse to not do this anymore. But I was afraid my mom was going to cry if I told her I didn't want to do it. And lo and behold, mom is sitting in the corner crying because she feels guilt. And dad is sitting there saying, oh my gosh, how do I fix this?
Yes.
Mom's crying, kids hiding peanuts. And I think I want people to know that they have permission to change their minds.
Yes.
It is okay to change your mind and say, this thing I wanted before, I don't want that anymore. And that's why it can be so beneficial to have multiple treatment modalities at our disposal. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about, and you've talked about sublingual immunotherapy on your podcast before, but this is a scenario when you have significant oral aversion, but the patient and the family still desire some layer of protection, that a transition from oral immunotherapy down to sublingual immunotherapy may actually make a lot of sense. But historically, we've always thought, well, sublingual immunotherapy is lower dose. We get on that for a while and it's a bridge to oral immunotherapy. Mm-hmm. But it can go both ways. And when we have the flexibility to pick and choose from this enormous toolkit of treatment options, we can serve our patients better, but only if they know that these options are available to them. Sometimes the patient doesn't realize and the family doesn't realize that if this thing isn't working out, all we have to do is pick up the phone and call our allergist and say, hey, we need some help. This isn't working for us, instead of trying to power through. Right?
Yes.
Because come sit, talk to me. I will help you figure it out. Maybe you don't need to be eating 8 peanuts every day. Maybe one will get the job done. Or maybe we switch to sublingual. Or maybe we say, listen, OIT, oral immunotherapy, served its purpose during a time in your life when you needed it. Before your frontal lobe was fully developed, when you were more impulsive, when you were surrounded by peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at school, when you were going to bake sales and play dates. But now you're 17, you're 18, you can read your own labels. Heck, you know how to cook. You can self-administer your own epinephrine, right? And you've decided that you have no desire to eat this food. It's not a failure. It's not a failure.
It's not a failure.
You decide to stop now, and all of that work, all of that time, all of that money you put into that treatment was not for nothing, right? I think that's what people are afraid of, that if we quit, all of that work we put in is a wash. It did no good, and that's not true. It served its purpose during a time when you needed it for safety, when you needed it for peace of mind, when you needed it for quality of life, and maybe now you don't need that anymore, and that's okay.
And that's okay. And that's okay. I know that there is a mom who needs to hear this, and that's okay. And things change and seasons change. We talk about a lot about your season of life, and this might not be the right season of life for OIT or SLIT, but maybe there's another season coming later, and it will be. And it's all about safety and quality of life.
Absolutely.
Dr. Bajwala, I have loved our conversation today about shared decision making. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Of course, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
That's the episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. Of course, I'm an allergist, but I'm not your allergist. So talk with your allergist about what you learned on this episode and visit us at foodallergyandyourkiddo.com, where you can submit your family's questions. God bless you, and God bless your family.